Welcome to Nourish and Shine, where I talk with passionate leaders in the fields of nutrition, functional and integrative medicine, and wellness, providing inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and live a whole vibrant life starting now. The Nourish and Shine podcast is provided for educational and informational purposes only, and it is not medical, mental health, or healthcare advice. The information presented here is not intended to diagnose, treat, heal, cure, or prevent any illness, medical condition, or mental or emotional condition. Please make sure you consult with a trusted healthcare professional before you make any changes. Today, I am absolutely thrilled to be talking with my friend, Amanda Corbett. She is a PharmD. She is also the Assistant Dean for Professional Curriculum and the Associate Director of Global Engagement and a Clinical Associate Professor at the University of North Carolina, Eshelman School of Pharmacy, and the Global Pharmacology Coordinator for the UNC Institute for Global Health and Infectious Disease. Dr. Corbett is board certified in pharmacotherapy and is a fellow of the American College of Clinical Pharmacy and the Academy of Integrative Health and Medicine. And that's where we met. We did our fellowship together. I can't think of anyone who I would rather learn from than Amanda Corbett, especially when it comes to natural products. Today, we're talking all about CBD. There is so much out there, and Amanda really does a nice job of laying everything out. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to Nourish and Shine. Today, I'm talking with Dr. Amanda Corbett. Thank you so much for being here, Amanda.
Thanks. It's really great to be talking with you today, Amy.
Yeah. And I would love for you to tell our audience about yourself.
Sure. So I am primarily a pharmacy professor at the University of North Carolina, Eshelman School of Pharmacy. I've been there almost 20 years on faculty and currently have a position where an administrative position around the professional curriculum. But for the past, say, 10 or 12 years, I focused in integrative medicine or integrative health, where I've had the opportunity to teach pharmacy students as well as other students about integrative health, which has been really nice to be able to provide that to more Western type trained healthcare students, which has been really, really, really great. My focus, I would say mostly, especially at the School of Pharmacy, is around dietary supplements. I actually started in integrative health from personal reasons and personal experiences in mind-body medicine, so in Reiki and biofield energy, as well as yoga. So I'm a Reiki master, done some biofield energy training, and then specialty training in dietary supplements and also yoga teacher training. Which has really been nice to provide other opportunities to healthcare professionals as well as other clients and patients that really help to support their health other than medications, which is kind of interesting because being a pharmacist, obviously we teach students about proper use of medications, but really my goal and my focus is to try to minimize medications as much as possible. We all know they're very expensive. They're not benign for sure. There are lots of adverse effects. So if patients really don't need medications, to me, that's even better. But obviously, there's many that are life-saving that we do need to use. So just making sure that we're looking at those appropriately is sort of my overall goal.
Yes, and that's why I love you. I think I totally share that sentiment and also like many of the same interests. And I think you do such a nice job and it's awesome that these students have you to bring this perspective early on. Today, we're going to talk about CBD, and it's a kind of a really hot topic right now, and I wanted to do this episode so bad with you. But let's just start off really broad. What is CBD, and kind of what's the difference when it comes to CBD versus THC?
Yeah, this is actually a really common question, especially for consumers and also for healthcare professionals. I've done a lot of talks this year for pharmacists and also for the public around CBD oil because it is so popular. And that question does come up quite a bit. So CBD oil specifically comes from the same plant that what we call THC or marijuana comes from. So there's really one plant, cannabis sativa, is the most common one. And that is, again, one specific plant. And there are some other common terms for that you might hear called hemp or marijuana or cannabis. And there are hundreds of what we call cannabinoids that are part of that plant. And CBD or cannabidiol just happens to be one of those cannabinoids. And then THC is another cannabinoid as well. So what we'll talk about mostly today is, as you've already mentioned, Amy, is going to be the CBD and CBD oil specifically as a product. So those specific products are going to have, by law, less than or equal to 0.3% THC. And for those not familiar with the terminology THC, it's just the component of what we traditionally think of as marijuana or cannabis, the component that has sort of the psychoactive effects. But cannabidiol or CBD oil, as is designed, should not have those specific psychoactive side effects.
Yeah, and from what I understand, they are sort of a counterbalance to each other, or balance each other out, as far as THC and CBD, generally speaking, have fairly opposite effects. Would that be accurate to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, could go into a whole discussion about plants in general that are very interesting. And I think, you know, just thinking about how plants are grown and the constituents of plants, you know, they're pretty smart, and they tend to have components that really do counteract each other for different purposes. Could be for protection of the environment, to make it grow efficiently and sufficiently. So yeah, that's exactly right, that those two cannabinoids do tend to sort of balance each other out. Yep.
Yeah. And so then when we're talking about cannabis and marijuana versus CBD, like you were saying, it's from the same plant. But it's really just a component that they've kind of teased out. And so can we talk about regulation? Because this is a topic that I kind of get a little bit passionate about.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And it's kind of a complicated question too. So I think, you know, if you think about, let's just back up a moment and talk about dietary supplements as a whole, which technically CBD oil is currently not one of those, but I think it's good to understand what dietary supplements are in general. So dietary supplements are defined by the FDA as a non-vitamin, non-mineral, or a vitamin or mineral, really a variety of products that can be used to supplement an individual or supplement the diet. And so that's very clearly defined by the FDA. And I would say plus or minus is regulated by the FDA. There is some regulation, but it's a much different type of regulation than for example, pharmaceutical agents or prescription medications. So with that, realizing there is some regulation around dietary supplements, CBD oil currently is not defined as a dietary supplement at all. And so this is where it gets really tricky. And there's been a lot of discussion at the FDA level, at the DEA level, about what do we do with CBD oil and its regulation. So I can tell you the history a little bit about what I know, and then something I just heard. sort of through the grapevine just this week, which sounds, I think, pretty promising for CBD oil, at least from a pharmacist standpoint. So, you know, there was a pharmaceutical agent that was FDA approved in 2018 called Epidiolex. And that product is more or less a pharmaceutical grade CBD oil. And so when that happened at the time, there were, I would say, even hundreds of CBD oil products that were available for purchase, as I would say, quote unquote, over the counter. So any consumer could go purchase at your corner store a CBD oil product when that pharmaceutical agent was approved. And in addition to that, when that pharmaceutical agent was approved in 2018, at that time, CBD was considered a Schedule I substance, which meant it was not, it wasn't allowed at all. So no one could actually dispense it or use it. However, very quickly, within a month or so after that pharmaceutical agent was FDA approved, it was switched to a Schedule V, meaning there was some regulation around it, but it was a legal pharmaceutical agent at that point, which may be a whole lot of legal ease, but I think it's important for those that are healthcare professionals to kind of know where we came from and where we are now. The other part about the CBD oil readily available over-the-counter products is that, as I stated, they're not currently a dietary supplement. However, there's hundreds of them that are being manufactured and sold. Some have good quality data and some actually do not, which I think we'll get into a little bit later. So right now, the FDA is having lots of discussion and listening to a lot of different stakeholders around this topic. And I was told very, very, very soon we'll determine whether or not CBD will be considered a dietary supplement or if it will remain as it is right now, which technically is an illegal product. So as of right now, no one can technically legally sell CBD oil, but there's some really funky legislation around how it's still happening, but not really tightly regulated. However, I did hear after multiple FDA discussions with stakeholders, and I heard from a stakeholder just this past week, that it does sound like the FDA is going to rule CBD oil to be a dietary supplement. And right now they're just working on the specifics around how it's going to be regulated and definitions around it. The reason for that, why at least the through the grapevine I heard conversation, was because the pharmaceutical agent Epidiolex, as I mentioned, is a pharmaceutical grade, nearly a pure 99-ish% CBD oil, whereas the dietary supplements are more of what we call a full spectrum CBD oil. So they're going to have other components of the plant within the product. So from what I've heard, you know, it's supposedly in the first or second quarter of 2020, we'll find out that these full spectrum CBD oil products will hopefully be determined as dietary supplements. Oh, so that was a very long answer to your question. I know.
Yeah, no, that's good. I think that's the necessary answer because it's so complicated right now. And I've said this before in other episodes, and it is changing shortly, but currently in Minnesota, which is the state I'm licensed, you cannot, an email went out that pharmacists cannot dispense or sell any CBD products in a pharmacy, or they will come, they say, the board will come and revoke your license. So they're changing that January 1st with new legislation. But in Minnesota currently, like, you can get CBD at the gas station, at your hairdresser, like anywhere else but a pharmacy, which seems a little bit crazy. So the legislation is changing in Minnesota as well. But sort of an interesting, complicated scenario. And I know it's going on across the country. One of the other things we've talked about like locally a lot is how it's grown. And the things you kind of have to be thoughtful about or cautious about with the growing conditions. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I know a little bit about that. And I think, you know, it sort of goes back to, you know, how it's grown and what the plant looks like. So yes, this is one plant, Cannabis sativa. However, it can be grown in certain conditions, certain soils that can really lead to a very different type of plant, multiple different types of plants. I would sort of think of it, not exactly, but equate it to wheat. So we know that you can grow wheat to have a very tall stalk that's not very bushy, or you can grow it to be very short and plump, which would provide more wheat, right? Mm-hmm. So for cannabis sativa or cannabis in general, you can grow it in a condition where you could have a really long stalk, for example. And we didn't talk about this, but the stalks themselves have really great properties and have been used for, gosh, thousands of years for many different reasons, such as for clothing and rope. I'm sure many folks may remember that hemp has been used traditionally for lots of different reasons. But you can also grow this plant to where there's more flowers, buds, and leaves available, where there might be less stalk. So depending on really what your desire is to be extractive from the plant would really depend on how you want to grow it. So if you want to grow it to have a high component of THC, then you would want to make sure you have flowers and buds that are, you know, have a high concentration of THC, which is a very different component than what we're talking about. However, if you wanted it to have a high component of CBD, then it would be grown in a different way where it would have less THC. And even from that, the manufacturers that I've spoken to will say, you know, they're going to have to do some manipulation of the plant when it's extracted to ensure that they're meeting that guidance of less than 0.3% of the product. Sort of a separate component, maybe this was part of what you're getting to, Amy, is, and this is true for any herbs and food to some extent as well, is the quality of the soil. Depending on the nutrients of the soil, we also know that in some soil you can have heavy metals, and this is not, you know, you can't really avoid heavy metals at all in soil, but there are obviously limitations to how much heavy metals you really want in your soil, because anything that the plant's going to grow in, those heavy metals could be taken up by the plant and then subsequently be in the extract of the plant, and then obviously ingested potentially by the individual that is taking the product. And especially when you concentrate down something like CBD oil or THC, there could be a concern with having heavy metals.
That's exactly what I was getting at, was the marijuana plants have been used for just like soil remediation and pulling up some of the heavy metals. So definitely thinking about like the quality of the soil and also just growing conditions in general. Some of the farmers I've talked with locally say that like a seed to grow a cannabis plant is $1 a seed. Which is quite expensive. And there's a fair amount of like pesticide use with the plant. So thinking about that as well and just being cognizant. And right now there's no regulation around kind of what's being used.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And, you know, it is a plant and we eat plants as well, right? So there's lots of food and we could extrapolate, I think, a lot of those concerns as well to the food that we eat, which is, I know, a whole nother topic and something I know we're both passionate about.
Yeah.
But yeah, just can't forget that this is something, even though you get it in a bottle or a little gel capsule or even in a cream, it still came from a plant that was grown in the soil.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So, as far as CBD oil, what are some of the things you want to make sure people know before they use CBD? As far as like, how do they select a good quality product or a decent product? And then what sort of things should they watch out for if they decide to use CBD?
And this gets, you know, kind of challenging, I think, at times as well, because this is a product that's sort of in this limbo situation. So we don't have necessarily a ton of information about it, but I can tell you at least what I know that we do know. And the, what I'm stating is also really true for any dietary supplement. So there's a couple of things I think of. One, as you mentioned, is product selection. And the other is any sort of herb-drug interactions. So any interactions that an individual might have with their prescription medications or over-the-counter medications while they're taking a CBD oil product. So I'll talk about product selection first. That is really challenging, especially for consumers, I would say, because as you've already said, you can buy these products at your hairdresser, at the gas station, almost anywhere. And it's really hard to know, are the products you're purchasing quality products? There is a really good online reference called Consumer Lab. It's at consumerlab.com. There is a requirement of, it is required by subscription, which is around $50 a year. It's a little bit less if you buy it for multiple years. It is something as a pharmacist and someone who studies dietary supplements that is really important for me. So I make sure I have access to that website.
And let me just say really fast, that is my absolute favorite website. And so every student that I have come through, I always have them use Consumer Labs, and just such a great resource.
It is. It's fantastic. And I even was able to hear directly from the CEO of that company at the NIH when I was there a couple months ago. And he did a fantastic presentation, talked a lot about the company itself and why they did what they did, what they do. And it made me respect that company even more so. So I highly, I equally recommend it to any students, consumers as well. It's, I would say, plus or minus consumer friendly, but definitely a more friendly website than some other resources that I have. So that site really does look at, or that company looks at lots of different dietary supplement products and looks at the content of them specifically. So it looks at, is what is on the label that says is in the product is actually in the product. And also they look at any heavy metal contaminants as well. And obviously it can't look at every single product that's available on the market, but they do look at a fair number of those. So, and they'll give you a really thorough report around what they found. So that's something I do recommend. Another way is you can call the company directly and get what's called a certificate of analysis. And some companies have those readily available on their website. But it gets a little bit tricky, I think, for a consumer because you do want to, you know, consider who, you know, where did this certificate of analysis come from? And is it a third party? Is it the company doing it or is it a third party that's providing that information? But it is another source to help, to at least help understand, is the company even testing their product at all to know what's in there and know that it's safe. So those are a couple of things you could look at as well. And then as far as herb drug interactions, the good news about CBD oil specifically is that at least there's a pharmaceutical agent that's FDA approved. So there was a lot of testing that had to go on for that product to be FDA approved. So we know a little bit about the potential for interactions with CBD oil, but what we really don't know are, you know, these full spectrum products that are readily available. Do those have a different potential for interactions than the pharmaceutical agent does? So I think at best what we can do right now is assume that any of the herb drug interactions that are predicted with the pharmaceutical agent and medications are likely going to be similar to what we see with CBD oil. I have seen there's more and more data being published, even in vitro data and cell culture data, which I think is a great start, especially because so many people are using these. Specifically for CBD oil, there is a risk with some pharmaceutical agents to have an interaction. Now, keep in mind, this is, again, based on data from the pharmaceutical agent Epidiolex, and that agent is likely quite different than what, again, you can buy as a consumer over the counter. However, I think it, to me, being a fairly conservative and a pharmacist to try to prevent these interactions, I would say if you're on any sort of prescription medications, it's really best to talk with, if you can, a pharmacist, if at all possible, to see is there a risk for you to take CBD oil. Now, that's a very cautious approach. However, with the doses that are used that are much lower for the over-the-counter agents, perhaps there's less of a risk for interactions, but I would be extremely cautious. I can give some specific classes of pharmaceutical agents that I would be especially cautious with. One are anti-anxiety medications, so things such as benzodiazepines I would not use on your own in combination with CBD oil. Perhaps with an experienced herbalist or pharmacist, I think would be very reasonable to try. Antidepressants are another, antipsychotics, seizure medications, anything that are anticoagulants like blood thinners, I would be very careful. Some blood pressure medications. And then there's also some other medications that we know have what we call a narrow therapeutic window. So things that, medications that would be used as chemotherapeutic agents or transplant medications, or antiretrovirals for HIV, to name a few, I would, not be using CBD oil with as a consumer, unless you're with a very experienced, pharmacist or herbalist or naturopathic physician who understands these types of interactions.
I completely agree. And that's such good advice. I think it's often looked at as like, well, it's natural, so it's safe. And people forget that there really can be some potentially serious interactions. What type of conditions are you seeing people using CBD for? And what has it really been studied for?
Well, that's a great question. So I've seen lots of different conditions from consumers specifically. Just to make sure we know, the pharmaceutical agent was FDA approved for very specific seizure disorders. And there's other seizure disorders in which it has been studied. And so that would be probably the first one I would mention, is seizure disorders, not necessarily these over-the-counter CBD oil products. And I would absolutely not recommend them to any consumer that has a seizure disorder to buy these over the counter and just use them instead of their medications. But there is quite a bit of data around seizures. There's also a fair amount of somewhat conflicting data, depending on the doses that you see and the conditions, around pain management. So this is pain with either rheumatoid arthritis or osteoarthritis, sometimes back pain, very little data with cancer pain as well. But a lot of individuals I've seen will either use orally available, so either the oil or the oil in a capsule, or topical as well for pain, depending on the pain. There's a little bit of data in Parkinson's disease. I think that data is growing. A tiny bit of data with schizophrenia. Autoimmune disease, I think, is definitely on the rise as far as the studying for that indication. However, there really aren't any, other than for rheumatoid arthritis, I haven't seen any significant data on autoimmunity. However, for me, that's a huge interest I would see is, you know, can we really study this in multiple types of autoimmune disease? Because those are very, very challenging. There is a little bit of data in individuals that have heroin use disorder. And I have heard that there is going to be even more data out in individuals that have heroin use disorder, and perhaps in individuals with opioid addiction as well. I certainly hope that we will have an agent, either Epidiolex or some data with the full spectrum CBD oils that can be used in individuals that do have opioid use disorders that are trying to, you know, really get off of those products. Because as we know, in our country and in other countries, this is a really huge problem that we have in lots of individuals. So there's lots of other anecdotal case report data for insomnia as well. But those are sort of the major things that that I've seen either data from or individuals that have said that's why they're taking the products.
Yes. And I would agree with that. And I think there is a wide range of uses right now. Some have some evidence and some don't. I see quite a bit of the like, well, my neighbor said this is really great and I'm not sure why I want to use it, but you know, it's just supposed to be wonderful. And so I think whenever you're using a product, just making sure it's indicated. So one thing I wanted to talk about was formulation too, because it's available orally, like in an oil, as a capsule, topically. Can you talk a little bit about the formulation and different kind of means of delivery and what you might use those for?
Yeah. So most of the products that I'm familiar with, and I've really just focused on a couple of different brands that I know the most about, or that I feel comfortable with their quality. So as I said, you can use them both orally as well as topically. So the oral products are often, you'll see as a extract within an oil. So maybe hemp oil, it may be some other type of oil so that they are aid in their absorption, for example. So those are available for many of the consumer-based products that I've seen. Interestingly, some of them will also be flavored to some degree, often with peppermint or with other types of flavor, because they often will not smell so pleasant unless there's some sort of flavor that does mask them. I can say I've smelled many different products, and it really just depends on the product itself as to the tolerability, I would say, both from the smell and the taste. There's also at least several companies also will have encapsulated oil, so it's almost a more of an oil type capsule that can be absorbed as well. And that those are available with a few companies that I've seen. And then also there's topical creams, gels, and lotions that individuals have used. Mostly where I've seen that has been for topical pain, but there may be other indications that I'm not as much aware of. Now, keep in mind those topical agents, unless they're formulated in a way where they're going to have fairly good absorption, they may not work as well as some other products, for example. So you just want to be aware that there is, some pharmacology around whether or not the agents that are topical are going to be effective. And with that, I will say, it's also really important to know that just like any oral products, topical products may be absorbed as well. So if these products are formulated so that they do have effects, they could have systemic concentrations or concentrations within the bloodstream that could also have systemic effects and effects with drug interactions as well. We don't know a lot about that. There's a small amount of data in animals, but really very little data about how these topical agents are absorbed or not.
I recently saw an FDA warning come out about using CBD products while pregnant or breastfeeding. What are your thoughts on that as well?
Yeah, great. I saw the same thing. Thank you so much. And it was a warning in essence saying basically it's likely not safe to use if you're pregnant or breastfeeding. I would 100% support that. I do not know of any data with these products in women that are pregnant or breastfeeding. I do believe there's some animal data about absorption to the fetus or through breast milk. I don't know that data off the top of my head, but absolutely in general, there's really no products I would recommend for anyone who's pregnant or breastfeeding unless they're absolutely critical for your health or for your baby's health. So I would 100% not recommend these if you're either pregnant or breastfeeding.
Good. Thank you. And then Another really popular topic lately has been kind of the concentration. So the doses that have been studied versus what's available commercially, and kind of the price to get those doses that have been studied. What's your experience with this or your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've had to step back a little bit and think about this because the doses that, let's start with the pharmaceutical agent Epidiolex, which again is a nearly pure CBD oil or CBD specifically. And most of the doses for those are in the hundreds. So 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 milligrams doses. And what we likely see as products of the CBD oil that you can purchase, you know, over the counter are often much lower doses. So 10 milligrams, 5, 10, 20, 25, 50 milligrams. I think the highest concentration I've seen is a 60 or 50 milligram per mil, or per 5 mil, sorry, dosing. And so those are going to be much lower doses than what we're thinking about for the pharmaceutical agent. Now, what's very sort of interesting or a little more complex is that these over-the-counter products, again, if indeed they are full-spectrum products, we really don't know if those lower doses are going to give similar outcomes as the higher dose of Epidiolex, which is very concentrated and a more of a pure CBD oil type product. So what I mean by that is if you have a full spectrum product that has other components other than CBD in it, are those components complementary to CBD's effects? And I don't think we have a great answer to that question. So what I mean, are they complementary? Could you, for example, have sufficient outcomes with a lower dose of a full spectrum CBD as you do with a much higher dose of a very pure concentrated CBD in the pharmaceutical agent? So I don't think any of us know the answer to that. However, if you're just trying to compare dose to dose of the over-the-counter to the prescription agent, you would have to spend hundreds of dollars per month on an equivalent dose of an over-the-counter agent as you would to the pharmaceutical agent. Now keep in mind, Epidiolex itself is not an inexpensive pharmaceutical agent. However, you know, insurances should cover it for the indications in which it's FDA approved. So in short, the doses are very different. The recommended doses are very different with the over-the-counter as compared to the pharmaceutical agent.
Oh, you bring up so many good points there. And that's something that I hadn't really fully considered, was really the difference between full spectrum versus more pure and all those extra components that might be in there. And that's something I think I've talked about a few times on the podcast, but really, like, what is, you know, the innate wisdom of the plant? And like you mentioned at the beginning, you know, plants are smart and there's a lot of things in there, which likely have an effect that maybe haven't been considered. So I really like your perspective on that. The potential for positive drug tests, that's something else I've heard discussed pretty widely. Can you speak to that?
You know, that's a great question. This actually came up in a consumer talk that I had, with a group of patients. And obviously THC is one thing, so we're not talking about THC here. However, I would say, so what would be tested in a drug test would likely be THC. Now, if you take a CBD oil product and assume, this is a big assumption, assuming that product has very low THC in the product, then technically you should not have detectable THC in your drug screening. However, if you take enough CBD oil, even if your CBD oil product legally fits a criteria of less than 0.3% THC, if you take enough CBD, you could have detectable THC in a drug screen. So that does get really tricky, and there's some There are some health systems that are saying that their employees are not allowed to take CBD oil or at all, because if they are tested, then perhaps they could see THC in a drug screen. What I would say is, if you are, you know, regularly tested for a drug screen for your job or for some other reason, I think you absolutely should disclose that you're taking CBD oil. And if that does, if it does show up in a urine drug screen, one option is you could request a more detailed screening, drug screening. And this has actually happened to me for patient reasons, for other medications as well that show up as sort of false negatives on a drug screen. I guess the short answer is it is possible if an individual is taking enough CBD oil, even if it meets the criteria for, you know, minimal THC, it could be positive on a drug screen.
Yeah, such a good point. So as we're starting to wrap up, I would love to hear what the word nourish means to you.
So for me, it really means self-care. And I know that's a very big term, but I think without individuals such as myself taking care of themselves, their mind and their body, it's really hard to be there for others, and really hard to be the best that you can be as an individual. So for me, it's really thinking about what I eat, that I consume every day, and also trying to practice as much mind-body practice as I can. So I can't say I have done this consistently, but I know that for me, being able to do regular meditation, also doing regular yoga practice, which I do now, are some things that are really critical to me. And also just having downtime, so being with my family and friends and just having some quiet alone time, to me is something that helps me to rejuvenate and to nourish my mind and body both.
I love it. And did I see that you're teaching aerial yoga now?
I am. It's so exciting.
Oh,
yeah.
Fun.
Yes. I got certified in the spring and started teaching shortly thereafter, and now have a class of students. I'm teaching teens and tweens right now. So that's been very interesting. And also we'll begin doing some subbing for adults as well. So it's something I sort of fell into by accident about a year ago and just fell in love with it. And it's a lot of fun. Highly recommend it.
Tell me about what you're doing now.
I think I mentioned early on, I'm full-time, more than full-time, pharmacy professor at UNC, but have a company, a really consulting company called World of One Global Integrative Health. And with that, it kind of morphs over time, depending on what I've learned and, you know, as my training also continues. It's mostly around consulting. So consulting for individuals on dietary supplements, as well as for mind-body practices. Also for, you know, really consulting and referring individuals out to others in our community that I think could really be helpful for them. I see that it's, especially when I began to know more about integrative health, I really struggled with, so who can help me the best and who's available and can understand what I really want is not necessarily medications, but someone who can think of other ways to ensure that I have the best health. So oftentimes I will refer individuals out to other practitioners in our area as well. I also use the company for providing speaking engagements or consultations to larger groups, either for consumers or any type of healthcare professional who may have an interest in integrative health. So I really enjoy talking to groups of people about whatever I can around integrative health and integrative medicine. Have a little bit of mind-body practice in it as well, but right now, mostly based on consultation and speaking engagements.
I love it. And the work you're doing is so important and impactful. And I love to follow you. I know you're on Facebook, but I love to follow you and see all of your traveling as well. I think you take some pretty amazing trips as part of your learning too.
Yeah, that's a very fortunate part of my position at UNC is that they're very supportive in my integrative health interest and also my global interest as well. And so I'm able to really combine my love for integrative health and global health at work as well. So that's definitely a benefit. And I feel very fortunate to be able to do that.
Well, thank you so much for being on today. I think you bring such a clear perspective that really is so valuable. Thank you so much for listening to Nourish and Shine. I hope that you enjoy this episode and that you'll leave me a review on iTunes so that more people can hear the podcast. I'd also love to connect with you on social media. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I would love to hear your questions, so please send them my way. Also, you can check out my website. It's amysopola.com. I hope that today's interview provided you with some inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and to live a whole, vibrant life. Please join me again next week for another amazing interview. Have a wonderful week. The Nourish and Shine podcast is provided for educational and informational purposes only, and it is not medical, mental health, or healthcare advice. The information presented here is not intended to diagnose, treat, heal, cure, or prevent any illness, medical condition, or mental or emotional condition. Please make sure you consult with a trusted healthcare professional before you make any changes.